Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, September 8th, 2012. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. And this day is very special. It's the 90th birthday of Lyndon LaRouche. So we extend to the universe, to him personally and at large, very best wishes. And certainly, I can speak for everyone, our profound gratitude that he was born, that he's here. It's only 90 years, and wishing many more years ahead. So this is a very happy moment in that sense. And because otherwise it's a very dangerous moment, I want to mention the topic for today. It's Make War on Banksters. And before I introduce our two guests, I just want to say a couple of obvious things. When you say banksters, I hope everyone thinks of Timothy Geithner, Ben Bernanke, name the one you want to think about, Jamie Dimon, Alan Greenspan, in Europe, Mario Draghi, George Soros. Anyway, that's one of the easy parts because they're still running loose and doing crimes. But for the moment, think about the word make war. And so this is very evocative, the expression war, because that's what we face with the same networks that have made looting practices the norm in the world of banking and financial and the real physical looting the real physical economy. These same networks, who are depraved, have a foreign policy that is being run through the President Obama White House, run out of kind of London-centered imperial finance that's been doing this. It's brought the world to this point of economic breakdown, and they're prepared to, or they're carrying out policies to instigate war in the Middle East, Syria, an attack on Iran, invasion of Syria. You see it all the time, which would in fact mean kicking off thermonuclear war. Now, I hope everyone saw a very important half-hour video called Unsurvivable, which was put out 1 week ago on the LaRouche Political Action Committee, and that says it there visually of what would happen in the immediate hours and then thereafter if such a thing comes to pass. So that's what must be stopped. And so these, as I say, these same networks are associated with perpetrating the gross crimes, drug running, money laundering, money connected to drugs, financial bailouts for cronies at the expense of people's lives, and denying a system which we have precedent for, we know about, that would be providing credit for the future, for agriculture, industry, and being human, going to space and learning things. So anyway, enough. That is the kind of context in which we are here to talk, including if people watched the Democratic Party convention this week at all, just to see what's going on. You saw the kind of mass, the presentation of glorying in killing, the exalting, glorying in murder. You saw the exalting of Obama for killing bin Laden, for other activities like that. So this just gives the atmosphere in which it defines our fight. It doesn't mean it's easy, but the crimes maybe have never been clearer, and that's what we're going to discuss today. So I'm very glad to have here live in the studio, I welcome Paul Gallagher. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Hope I'm live.
Yes, you're very lively, I'm sure, and who does everything, and with EIR, especially economics. And also Paul does have, Paul would like people to listen to, obey him more, I think, on Capitol Hill. But in 2 days, right, Paul, Congress is coming back after a recess they shouldn't have taken anyway, right?
They're coming back for one of their brief inter-recess sessions, in between recess, yeah.
So we can get to that throughout the hour. But I'm very glad to have from Europe, speaking to us from Germany, Roger Moore. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you much. I'm glad to be on.
That's clear. And Roger, again, among many things, is a super active researcher and contributor to different website news sites, especially on bankster crimes and dirty tricks for years. I was just looking at an article of yours in 2007. We may get to that just 5 years ago, thinking about what's been leading up to today's crisis. But what I'd like to do, if Paul, you start with the kind of opening on the strategic situation we have. I mean, one thing in my mind is on Thursday, that was 2 days ago, September 6th, when the European Community Bank head Mario Draghi spoke and I guess made this announcement, let's have one more final encore of complete financial bailout. But what's the situation?
Well, I think it's important that we start by remembering what we're mobilizing to do. We've been fighting for a year to get Glass-Steagall reenacted by the Congress. We've made some progress. We haven't gotten it done yet. We've been fighting for that in order to, because Glass-Steagall will make it possible to issue national credit, to establish some form of national banking and national credit, and build infrastructure and stop a real unprecedented collapse of the economies in the United States and Europe. And at the same time, as LaRouche has noted a number of times, while this is going on, this collapse is going on, the nations of Asia in particular, centered around the Chinese economy, have Asia and Eurasia to a certain extent, have continued to grow. And it's notable that, for example, just a few days ago, the Chinese government announced yet another massive infrastructure investment initiative, in this case involving more than 180 intercity high-speed rail projects that are going to be built within periods of no more than 8 years, in most cases significantly less than that. This kind of investment they have done repeatedly since the crash in 07, 08, and that's the reason they have not crashed, because they put many percent of their GDP, if you want to measure it that way, into these repeated large-scale and very modern, technologically very modern infrastructure investments. This is the epitome of why we are on the verge of war, of thermonuclear war, because the British, particularly Tony Blair, what he represents, and Obama along with him, they want to take this down. They want to bluff China and its potential ally in this, Russia, into submission and into allowing the so-called right to protect doctrine, the ability to change any regime in the world that Blair and his circles and Obama decide to remove. The Russians, the Chinese are obviously effectively stopping this. They want to bluff them into backing down, but they're not at all unwilling to go to nuclear war if the Russia and China don't back down. So we are in a situation which harks back to the British starting World War I, preparing for 20 years to destroy Germany because Germany was becoming a greater economic and strategic economic power than Britain was. And that is the actual dynamic which has led to this extraordinary attempt by the military leadership in the United States to block Obama from provoking war, which will become thermonuclear. But it highlights the fact that the economies of the United States and Europe, at a point when the chairman of the European Central Bank, Draghi, and the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, helicopter Ben, both this week on the verge, apparently, of restarting what they think will be massive new qualitative easing, new money printing, new hyperinflation, printing money and buying things from the banks with it on the scale of trillions. They're doing that with the economies of the United States and Europe contracting at an accelerating rate. We are really in a crash, really in a collapse. There was a horrifying, just the latest horrifying report on mass unemployment in the United States came out Friday, even freaked out people like Bernanke. It's that bad. And in addition, we've had the reports that the income of households in this country has been falling faster since Obama was president, and particularly since the beginning of 2010 under Obama, it's been polling faster than it did in 07, 08, 09 when the crash was on, that the few people who are getting jobs are getting minimum wage to $12, $13 an hour jobs. That's it. This is a disintegration of the economy, and in Europe, of course, it is worse, much worse, with some of the countries like Greece and Spain and Portugal and Ireland being forced into real destruction of their economies and their populations, and people leaving those countries in increasing numbers because they're convinced they can't survive in them. So it's in that crash that we have to get Glass-Steagall reenacted and credit generated by that means, and that what we're up against in this is the same Obama White House and a bunch of banksters whose prosecution has been blocked up to this point, when even Democrats in the Senate have been demanding it. Prosecution has been blocked. And it's brought us to a point now where we are also facing the verge of new hyperinflation from Draghi and from Bernanke. The Federal Reserve meets on Thursday. On Wednesday. And the ECB, of course, has just announced something, which is an intention for unlimited printing of money in a collapse. When you print money in a collapse in an unlimited fashion, as Draghi announced he's going to do, you trigger hyperinflation, as was done in Germany in the 1920s, the early 1920s. So this is what we're fighting to stop, and the war consequence of it. And a part of that Glass-Steagall fight is also that there are bank crimes which have to be prosecuted, and those prosecutions are being blocked in most cases by the Obama administration as well. So that's the situation that I think we're in, at least to set the table for it.
Right. I just want to let me just say one thing in passing. We have a storm watch here in the region in which our studio is located, near Washington in Northern Virginia. So if anything technically goes wrong, just it's only an interruption.
We're hearing a certain drumming on the roof.
Yes, we suddenly are hearing. It's been on alert, and we have no reason to think what will happen one way or another, but I'll just put that in. Right. Thanks, Paul. And so, Roger, you may want to say something from your vantage point in Europe, in whether it's the question of the potentiality, if a shift were forced in Washington D.C. You have individual voices in Europe supporting Glass-Steagall. You have these developments, although on their own, it's not defining. But would you comment on this?
Yeah, well, I've had the opportunity in the last several weeks, in the course of trying to deal with the crime side of the fight that we have to deal with in terms of pushing through Glass-Steagall also here. But I've had the opportunity to speak with former police investigators that are in some cases well-known, some cases not so well-known, former Scotland Yard people. In particular, one person who was also the whistleblower in the Wachovia case, which was a famous case where Eric Holder from the Justice Department and the Obama administration, and presumably with the coverage of Timothy Geithner at Treasury, merely gave a slap on the wrist fine for Wachovia Bank in the U.S. for its $380 billion of money transfers, which between the U.S. and Mexico, of which a significant percentage was hardcore cocaine narcotics money. That was 2010. And Martin Woods is a fairly well-known figure, gets quoted a lot whenever people like to mention the drug side, the drug trafficking side of the banksters and what was going on. I think, though, in terms of what you mentioned in the beginning and what Paul mentioned, it would be useful to see something that could be going on and where the Russian factor is not to be overlooked, and that's the person of Viktor Ivanov, who's the head of the Russian Federal Drug Control Service, in Russian FSKN, and who is a well-known figure within Europe, within law enforcement in Europe. He's often here. In fact, I would have had the opportunity to be at a conference. I'll be at a conference Wednesday and Thursday on money laundering of largely German police investigators from the federal government and the state governments, a conference that's going on in Leipzig, where he was scheduled to give the keynote speech. For various reasons that are not known to me, he couldn't come. He's also obviously known in the U.S. for his very famous, for anybody who reads our publications and is a bit on the inside of some of the law enforcement efforts and investigatory efforts within the United States. He's well known for his November 2011 speech at the CSIS think tank, where he went after the percentage, the way in which drug money was actually bailing out bailing out the banking system, and in which, in response to questions from us, he also addressed the issue of Glass-Steagall, its uses, and so forth. The people I've talked to in London, though, have been very out of historical experience on their part, have been very insistent that whatever changes come out of London, and if they don't come out of London, we won't quite see them in the continent, except as we and our allies here in France and Germany and Italy push it, is that it depends on the United States and forces in the United States to actually go and take out the knives and go for the prosecution. The evidence is all there. Senator Levine's Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations report on HSBC, the old Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, he presented the evidence. Neil Barofsky has presented the evidence, as many people have presented the evidence, and hopefully the House Financial Services Committee, if it had a little bit more guts, would go after Geithner for tolerating the criminal practices associated with LIBOR. Of course, LIBOR, J.P. Morgan, Wachovia, these are all things that have fed into the intensifying the debate on Glass-Steagall in the U.S. It has helped herd more people to supporting the resolution 1489, House Resolution 1489 of Walter Jones, the Republican, and Marcy Kaptur. What I think is lacking is this commitment to go for actual prosecution from the people who know there should be prosecution, that Geithner and Obama will be protecting it, is true. And the thing about Viktor Ivanov, he's not just a person who speaks on the drug issue. Viktor Ivanov is an important back channel to the United States military. This comes from his involvement with the effort to get NATO, to get the United States within NATO to do something about the massive heroin traffic that's been coming out of Afghanistan since, which has increased 40 times since NATO invaded Afghanistan. The increase of opium and then heroin production and trafficking worldwide, but out of this unique and singular source, Afghanistan, all took place under the presence of the NATO troops in Afghanistan to this day. And in that capacity, he's had a working relationship with people in the U.S. military. It's been symbolic, but organizing anti-drug raids against, caches of heroin that is still within the country. He's also been calling for going after the trafficking networks that have been operating in this area for three decades and more, who are not Afghani, but are drug trafficking networks that operate outside of the country and have handled 30-plus years of heroin trafficking into Western Europe and to a much lesser extent into the United States. So he's a back channel. The issue might be stop the narcotics trafficking and, like he said at in Washington in November, go after the banks that are doing the laundering for all of this. And as he pointed out, and as everybody knows, should know, only less than 1% of the money earned in narcotics trafficking internationally and related criminal activities only 1% is ever seized. And you're talking about, on the narcotics side, just conservatively, $600 plus billion a year, and with related crime, conservatively again, $1.2 trillion of money that accumulates every year and is laundered through primarily the transatlantic banking system. And as Martin Woods, the former fraud squad detective in the UK and the former whistleblower from Wachovia, has said, the chief money laundering centers are London and they are in New York. It's not even just the Caribbean dependencies and the offshore havens. The money eventually makes its way into New York, as we know with HSBC. These are the things that Geithner and the Obama administration, they didn't invent it, but they've been protecting it with a ferocity ever since the Obama administration came in, and they proved it on Wachovia. There's a lot of people in law enforcement, as I'm told from people in London in the U.S., who are, you know, not foaming at the mouth, they're biting at the bit to be unleashed, to go after these people. And, of course, you know, that's the challenge. It's not going to come from the administration. Hopefully it would come from voices in the Congress. There's been the evidence that's been presented. And I think, you know, that is this relationship of Ivanov and the Russians in back-channel dialogues with the U.S. military, who are also dealing with the Afghan problem. One channel would be, the military is not going to do this, although they are setting up an anti-trafficking center in Stuttgart here for the European command under Admiral Stavridis. They're staffing it. They want to go after the drug trafficking that comes into Europe, either from Colombia through Spain, as well as into Western Europe and Eastern Europe from Afghanistan and through the Balkan routes and the other routes. They have a mandate to do something on that. I don't expect the solution to come from them, but that back channel is there. And perhaps some people who are dealing with the Glass-Steagall issue, the war avoidance issue, the issue of getting rid of the Obama administration, will pick up this weapon because it's there. The knives are sharpened. We just have to find the people to actually use it and break through the containment from the Justice Department, Obama's Justice Department and Treasury Department.
You know, I think there are two perhaps most important or most two spear points which may break through. One involves LIBOR or LIBOR. And the general rigging of LIBOR rates on which everything is based all over the world, which has now clearly been shown even in news articles to involve at least 16 banks, scores of derivatives traders, and essentially the crookedness of the whole international derivatives market. That's one spear point. The other, and that in particular because it's been under investigation in one way or another for more than 4 years by both federal and state and in Europe also, evidently, at least supervisory authorities. And then secondly, what has just been shown about HSBC because of the massiveness of the and blatant character of the drug money laundering, including direct collaboration of that bank. If people remember the old BCCI bank, which no longer exists, essentially HSBC is doing and is exposed by the Levin-Coburn Committee of the U.S. Senate to have been doing what BCCI used to do before it was prosecuted and collapsed and was rolled up. It is acting as a money channeling vehicle for international drug trafficking and international terrorist crime in various ways, and intersecting the predominant Saudi role, particularly the predominant role of Prince Bandar and his circles in Saudi Arabia, in this intersection between drug money laundering and terrorist crime. So that was so thoroughly exposed and so clearly demanded, as the senators said, that the banking license of HSBC Hong Kong and Shanghai should be removed And believe me, that would have global systemic financial market effects if the banking license of a bank that size were pulled. These two spear points could clearly break through. The LIBOR thing, as you know, Marcia and Roger knows as well, involves municipalities, states, agencies all over the world, which are involved now in lawsuits, civil lawsuits, trying to recover what tremendous millions in damages they each of them suffered as a result of crooked derivatives, which were low, in which the thumb was on the scale. Essentially, this LIBOR rigging converted the entire hundred trillion derivatives markets into betting against the house at Las Vegas, where you had as much chance of protecting anything you owned as if you went to Las Vegas and determined to bet against the house. That's what the international derivatives trade, now worth a quadrillion dollars nominally, that's what it is. That's what it's exposed to have been. So there's no reason for it to exist at all, and it's ripe for prosecution, whether it begins with individual traders or individual managers at banks. So these two things. Now, we run into this very clearly. We experience it very clearly in all of our organizing, that this is a huge battle among Democrats. This is a huge increasing factional battle among Democrats. It is, as Roger said, Barack Obama and Timothy Geithner, who, and Eric Holder, of course, being the executor of this policy, preventing the prosecution of any of this over and over and over again, so that the same banks who have deferred prosecution agreements from previous scandals like this, and those deferred prosecution agreements are supposed to entail immediate prosecution if you then violate again. In effect, you're supposed to be on probation for a certain number of times. They then repeatedly violate and engage in the same criminal activity. They get another deferred prosecution agreement. And this is Justice Department policy. 17 deferred prosecution agreements in the last 3 years issued by the Justice Department alone in order to cover and protect. It's not 17 different banks. It's more like a dozen different banks that have been covered, some of them multiple times, that have been protected in this way. So it's Obama, Geithner, Holder. That is the reason there's no prosecution going on. But it is in the Democratic Party where there is the greatest anger at this and at the Obama policy in general. The Republicans are campaigning against an ideological parody of Obama. They're not campaigning against the real Obama, the real dictator, the real Nero, the real potential Hitler Obama. The Democrats are directly experiencing that character of the president and reacting much more viscerally in Congress and elsewhere. So, and they as well have developed the real goods on these banksters, and it's important to note that some of it has been developed as well by states, by the attorney generals of states, and even the district attorneys of cities, in the case of New York in particular, and that these also are Democratic office holders who have launched criminal investigations on the state level in the absence of anything, not the absence, but in the blocking of everything at the federal level. So it's a battle that really is aiding in splitting the Democratic Party, and it's part and parcel of the fight to dump Obama, and I think these are spear points for that.
Right. Do you, Roger, you may observe that or not, but also I understand in, or a comment on that or not, excuse me. I also understand in Germany that from time to time there are expressions of outrage at the criminality as what was done to municipalities. There was the era of the hedge fund depredations. Then there were, in other words, some of the associations of localities, local governments and so forth in Germany, there's a, there are, and in France, there's activation to demand against the system is what it amounts to, although the question is making it effective. Can you say anything about that?
Well, there's a broad pattern, including in the UK, in Great Britain. It's in Italy, where the sentiment in some of these localities has been such that local prosecutors were able to launch raids on some of the megabanks in Milan on some of these LIBOR-based derivative, be it interest swaps or other things that they had been rigging and pushing on the municipalities, with the consequences that we know also from the United States in terms of bleeding the state budgets and imposing austerity on communities and so forth. I tend to think that the main revolt in Germany is in the public mind are related to the European stability mechanism.
Yeah, do you want to go through the where?
Well, there was just today in Stuttgart, I don't have the organizer's report, but there were there was a demonstration of 700 to 1,000 people in Stuttgart, the Bürgerrechtsbewegung Solidarität, the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. Solidarity of Helga Zepplerusch was down there with a very big banner. No to the ESM dictatorship, go with Glass-Steagall now, although Trennbankensystem in German, separate the banks, the bank separation system. And I don't have the actual organizing reports. It's been covered in the media that it's going on. And, of course, the very big event coming up is actually a very profound focus on the constitutional issue of whether Germany's sovereignty should be canceled, in effect, for the benefit of the bailout mechanism in the current form in the Eurozone, which is the European Stability Mechanism. And this would be the issue of the German Parliament turning over its right over the budget and the future obligations of that budget, of the tax money that it collects, to back up potentially a trillion or more, it's actually unlimited in theoretical potential bailout measures, de facto for the banks, supposedly for the state debt, but it's de facto for the banks that have been living off state debt that has been providing the national rescue programs, bailout programs. So that is, there is an immense majority sentiment in the country that this should not be tolerated. What happens with it, that's the big question that our organizers are trying to deal with. If it breaks out here, it's going to force the French situation that has been primed by Jacques Cheminade's campaign back in the spring when he was running for president of France and was able to do all kinds of things, but with the central issue being on Glass-Steagall, the separation of the banks, ending the bailouts. He was also attacked because supposedly, because of this issue that we say the Queen of England distributes drugs. And, of course, everything that's gone on with Coutts Bank and with HSBC since that campaign, you can imagine the respect and the growing of respect for Jacques and our colleagues in the Solidarité and Progrès movement in France. So that's a big weapon that we have. I can't particularly say from today to tomorrow or into the next week and so forth. But if there's a break, if the breakup of the Eurozone begins, if there's a sort of a, what you say in German, na ja, yes, but answer from the Constitutional Court, there is some sentiment that the system is so bankrupt that even a minor rejection or a minor critique on the sovereignty issue coming out of the Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe on the 12th, that even that would be sufficient to ignite another level of resistance, which basically would mean that the bailout, the European continental side of the bailout mechanism, which is the transatlantic bailout mechanism led by Geithner and circles in London, that Germany could be the catalyst for the end of that. That would immediately have an impact on your work in the U.S. because they're scared They're scared. I don't want to use the word.
Roger, can I just ask, at this point, I have the impression, but I haven't seen anything of it. Has Helga Zaplarush, is she issuing a statement, something to the effect that after the Draghi announcement of unlimited money printing that Germany should leave the euro? Has she issued a statement?
Well, she usually does things going from Friday to Saturday. I have not seen anything from the end of the week, but
okay.
that doesn't mean I'm well informed on that. Certainly the whole organization here is geared up for the fact that there's going to be a lot of blowback to what Draghi has come out and said he intends to do. And it's not clear that, for instance, that Spain, it depends on exactly how this thing works, but that Spain would want to go begging to the existing bailout, Eurozone bailout fund, the European Financial Stability Facility or Fund, whatever it's called, EFSF, that they wouldn't go to it. There's all kinds of ways in which this thing could very quickly fly apart. Not necessarily because there's a quality of leadership outside of us. There are people outside of us, but simply because it is so bankrupt. And if there's a minority of resistance, and Germany is the key on this, and it could trigger all kinds of things. We have people in Italy who are all ready to go for Glass-Steagall in one form or another. It might not be exactly our form. Tremonti is the former finance minister who, before he was the finance minister, joined Lyndon LaRouche at, for people who are informed, a very famous joint conference on the financial crisis in Rome 4 years ago, and Jacques' campaign, and the spearhead situation of the of Helga and the party here, because we're really still. There's voices in industry that have come out for Glass-Steagall. The head of Heidelberg Cement, which is one of the biggest cement companies in the world, came out several weeks ago, and he says he wants a clear breakdown of the banks between investment and deposit and commercial. Clean break. That's what he said. And the coverage said, what does this mean? The bank that's relevant is Deutsche Bank. And Deutsche Bank is a London hedge fund that calls itself Deutsche Bank and has some branches in Germany, but it's basically a London and New York hedge fund that was used to corrupt Germany. So what's with the Libor scandal is also, if we get into the phase of actual prosecutions, this will be used by people in Germany, even within the Deutsche Bank, who want to abandon and don't want to take on the obligations that would be associated when the transatlantic banking system goes into disintegration. If the bailout mechanism, these hyperinflationary things, they can't hold. So they're going to, and this will all happen probably before the election. And so that means that the U.S. election, suddenly this becomes a very dominant issue that this not just the bad economic news and the unemployment and so forth, the whole criminality of the last 4 to 5 years. Glass-Steagall should have been done in 2007 and 2008 with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. For reasons we know, it wasn't done. Obama came in, and we know why, the policy was continued to the bailouts. But that has come to an end, and I think that the evidence that's in investigative agencies in the U.S., in the U.K., potentially within Germany, there's a sentiment within financial crime experts in the financial investigatory field within Germany that they want to go after banksters. They like to use that word. There's that kind of a sentiment in France, certainly in various forms there in Italy. But it really depends on the United States, the combination that got Roosevelt to accomplish what he could. Fernando Pecora, a former attorney, probably a district attorney in any case, an attorney in New York City, a prosecutor in New York City.
Yeah, he was a district attorney, yeah.
He was a DA. I just want to just briefly mention, because I can't, it's not a promise on anything, but tomorrow a week-long conference finishes in Cambridge University at the Jesus College, is one of the oldest colleges of Cambridge. And at that is conference speaking is John Moscow. There's a lot of speeches. It's a very big conference, over 1,000 people. 98% of it is probably not worth sitting through. You'd probably fall asleep. But there are key people there at that conference from the United States. And my hope is, like in 1989-90, John Moscow, who was the prosecuting attorney in the New York DA's office, the Manhattan DA's office in 89, he was at that conference. It's gone on every year for 30 years now. And he was at a conference there in Cambridge in 1939, this financial crime conference, it's called, or financial crime symposium. And he came at that conference. He had the experience of watching lawyers from some of these top law firms in London, the so-called magic circle law firms that handle all the globalization, derivatives, M&A business, and so forth. And there was a guy who was going to give a speech on BCCI, and they came in and said, this guy's not allowed to give a speech. If he starts to give the speech, he will be arrested. And John Moscow was a witness to this. And then when he left the conference, he said, I'm going to prosecute in New York. And he worked with Jack Bloom, who's a known figure in Washington, a known figure in the U.S., who just a couple of weeks ago came out and warned Obama is going to go for a cover-up settlement on HSBC. And he says, we need prosecution. So John Moscow's at that conference. The undercover customs agent who was used, who spent a year and a half or 2 years in the Pablo Escobar BCCI money laundering link in 1989, he was the undercover agent in that. He's at that conference. There's a man named John Cassara, who's a former CIA agent and customs agent. Who is probably an advisor to the government. I don't know in what capacity he is, but it's, and he's an expert on the money laundering techniques around Afghanistan and is somebody who's focused on Dubai, which is known as a hub for London for dirty money in that area of the world, and as a drug transit point as well as a money laundering point for the Afghan heroin trade. He's also at that conference. There's all kinds of interesting people there. The Rowan Bosworth Davies, a former fraud squad detective, a former head of chief investigator for the predecessor to the existing Financial Services Agency Authority of the UK, the Oversight Agency, which is a pretty limp-wristed affair, who also just recently gave us a short interview in EIR. He's also speaking at that conference. My hope is that there's a certain amount of the planning hopefully going on that could come out of that conference. It won't be in the headlines, though. But what you hopefully would see is some people saying that the people have evidence on, say, Geithner, on, and not just that he made recommendations on how to the Bank of England on how to improve the LIBOR problem, but that maybe there are sources who've already been giving evidence to some of the investigative agencies on LIBOR, that Geithner told them to shut up and don't talk about it. You know, because under Geithner, HSBC moved $7 billion in late 2007, 2008, $7 billion in U.S. dollar banknotes from Mexico to HSBC U.S. and HSBC U.S. in New York, took those year and a half of banknotes coming out of Mexico for what? Tortillas? No, for cocaine money. And putting this in the Fed precisely at the moment that the London interbank market, of which LIBOR is merely an interest rate marker, which is the bank, it's this 30, 40 year deregulated dollar and other currency market in London where the banks funnel money between each other. That thing was shut down in 2007, 2008 already. And as Antonio Maria Costa told us in April in EIR, and he told other publications in 2009, organized crime money was used to rescue the banks. And that was 2007 and 2008. $7 billion from HSBC alone was used with the complicity of Geithner to flood cash into the into the hands of the Fed and the banks that then had that cash turned into currency into their bank accounts, which at the Fed.
And we should just indicate that this is at least in part documented in the most recent report by the Senate Permanent Investigations Subcommittee, and therefore it is, in addition, evidence banging up against the Justice Department.
Absolutely.
when that committee has already been through one round with the Justice Department on the issue of Goldman Sachs, where the committee investigated, found crime, referred it to the Justice Department, asked for criminal prosecutions, was told they would be considered, and then was completely stiffed by Holder over a period of now just under 2 years. And it's now clear that nothing is going to happen with any of that evidence. So this committee is now coming back for the second time to the same Holder with clear, in this case, even clearer evidence of criminality, of some of which Roger was just going through. But there's also, before we run out of time, we should also make clear that, as you mentioned at the beginning, Marcia, the heads of the central banks are banksters as well. What you have Draghi doing at this point is criminal activity. And it will eventually be shown in court form to be that. He's, number one, he is arrogating powers which the European Central Bank does not have. He was challenged on this at the most recent press conference where he announced this unlimited money printing. And he is essentially offering a contract to monetize unlimited amounts of debt on the part of European governments on the condition that they butcher their populations. And what's happening in Greece, which are clearly the models, I mean, he's saying if these same kinds of agreements under the Troika are made by other countries, such as Spain, Italy, these bailout agreements, then the central bank will monetize their debt, print money to monetize their debt. And these agreements in Greece are murderous. They are causing mass suicides. They are causing mass death for lack of pharmaceuticals, for lack of medical treatment, for inability to buy the essentials of life, the loss of pensions, the cutting short of lives. They are now beginning to impose the six-day work week again in Greece, perhaps the 10-hour work day. I mean, this is more than economic collapse. This is real genocide, slaughter of populations. And Draghi is saying this is the condition for the central bank, the European Central Bank, monetizing the debt of countries which perform in this way. This is real crime. I heard from one person who was at the recent Jackson Hole conference and talked for a period there to Bernanke, that Bernanke is saying that he wants to coordinate very closely what the Federal Reserve is now going to do with the European Central Bank. So it will be in the same, we will see this week what Bernanke can get the board, the committee, the Open Market Committee, to announce. He clearly, and there's some others there who clearly want a real outburst of printing money and buying assets from the banks with it yet again. We'll see what other aspects there are to what Bernanke will announce. But in the way that Draghi has started this, this phase of this new phase of hyperinflation, it's criminal.
Yeah, it's all for the benefit of a quadrillion-dollar corpse known as the derivatives and gambling debts of the transatlantic banking system.
Yeah, I think one thing that stands out, and let me just comment on this, that we saw Paul, you wrote years ago, I think in the 1990s, of the famous and extensive and deadly, you could call it a banking blowout. You wrote an article on the 1340 fall of the Fuggers and the And the others?
The
Bardi and the Peruzzi. And I think your article was titled How Banksters in Venice Rigged the First and Worst Global Financial Collapse. If that isn't your title, it's because your article's been reposted since then.
No, that was the title, yeah.
Yeah, and the point, that was 650 years ago when you wrote it at the time. And a point you made there was because you did some of the demographics of loss of life, 25% in general, 30 to 50% in certain parishes in Europe. But you were making the point then, at the time, you didn't have some of the certain kinds of national governments as institutions that should be representing the interests of the population. The papacy wasn't acting in that. It's an institution, mm-hmm. but it wasn't acting in that way either at the time. Now, since then, in recent times, and we now face a collapse that's bigger. I mean, no joke about, you mentioned about Greece, no medications, you know, about disease threat. We have a food crisis. We have a famine policy. So, but we have institutions. What the two of you have been talking about for 50 minutes is the institutions of the U.S. government that has all the power and acted under Franklin Roosevelt to use it. The institutions in Europe, which have certain downside constraints. In other words, we're left here with this situation. Paul, you might discuss, take Congress coming back. We're not talking about people listening to this show and the public we're reaching, whether it's Stuttgart in Germany or Stuttgart, Pennsylvania. There is one, you know. But we've got a – or New York State. There's one there too, I think. But people have to do what they don't expect to do. They have to give orders, not lobby, like they never have before. Right. We still have vestiges of institutions. We can revive them. Do you want to say – because you're often on Capitol Hill and elsewhere –
I mean, it's we try to do it that way because the Congress is a completely leaderless group in the recent year or so. In particular, it's been rendered that way by the preparations for the attempt to reelect Obama. You know, we tried to stop that. We tried to organize for another Democratic candidate, but that and the similar reactions on the Republican side has really made it a leaderless group. So we have to act that way, combining, completely riling up the population in Washington, D.C. by days of action and weeks of mobilization with mass leafleting and banners and the famous mustache posters of Obama. These things rile up also employees of Congress, the aides who work for them, in various ways. They polarize them underneath the members. And, you know, out in the country, it is certainly the case that the constituencies, the broad constituencies that we identify with, particularly the Democratic Party, labor, Hispanic constituencies, farm, at least some farm constituencies, urban machines, they support Glass-Steagall. In many cases, they are really enthusiastically support Glass-Steagall and on a mass basis. At the Democratic Convention, where 15 delegates wanted to introduce Glass-Steagall to the platform and were barred from doing so, we had a very small delegation there. But when they spoke at caucuses within the Democratic Convention, as soon as they mentioned Glass-Steagall, applause would immediately break out spontaneously in whatever delegation it was. We had the same experience with the Maria Cantwell, who is blocked by the intimidated by the White House, Senator Maria Cantwell, intimidated by the White House against introducing the bill. But when she brings it up in any kind of political meeting in Washington State, which she represents, she brings the House down at whatever kind of meeting it is. This is really a demand which has considerable force, and we simply have to act as if we are ordering them to put it through. I mean, what we're concentrating on in Washington now is the threat of war.
Yeah, I'll say that I hope everyone's circulating the statement, a vote for Obama is a vote for thermonuclear war. Keep going, Paul, but I mean, this was... this past week, even though the congressmen weren't back, a couple thousand were got out, every office in Capitol Hill, general population. This was circulated in Washington.
Yeah, but as I said at the beginning, the reason that there is this Blair-Obama war policy which threatens thermonuclear war is that they are trying to destroy economic growth in Asia where it still exists, having really destroyed, not on their own, obviously, but with economic growth really completely destroyed in the United States and in Europe, and that's bringing us closer to war. So we have to take charge and get that policy through, get the immediate policy of the Walter Jones HCR 107 resolution, which says that if this president starts another war without the consultation with Congress in advance, that this is an impeachable crime and will be impeached. That's the immediate spear point, but we have to impose this Glass-Steagall policy. And as Roger was indicating, any breakthrough on a prosecution of banksters will make that far more likely, because it will be a breakthrough against exactly the same clampdown on the part of the White House, on the part of Holder, on the part of the Treasury, Obama. So any breakthrough where LIBOR criminals are prosecuted, where SBC is prosecuted, anything of this nature will be a breach in the wall against Glass-Steagall.
Right. And so I think in people's response to, because there is popular disgust, there's desperation, and then there's also disgust nobody gets jailed, the headlines come out on all the crimes. I had neglected to say at the beginning, I want to say that people should watch in the next few days, because I heard this morning that Mr. LaRouche said on the occasion of his own 90th birthday, he's going to make a statement about the alternative to popular opinion. Meaning, I'm sure, at the very least, you don't have to go. There's nothing to go along for to get along, so you better. So that's going to happen over the next 24 hours, probably, and people can watch for that at the beginning of the week. But, Roger, do you want to say anything in the closing minutes, likewise, based on what Paul's saying, for people to do everything to increase the potentiality that we can force a radical shift from this doom policy? Otherwise, it's guaranteed doom. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just think once the first serious prosecutions start, the dam will be broken on both sides of the Atlantic. You'll see it first in the U.S., then in the U.K., and then it'll spill very quickly into Germany with very serious consequences for Deutsche Bank. And it will begin to hit the bailout banks in France that have all been living off these criminal practices. So, it could be, there might be token prosecutions. I can't from a distance talk about those things. But anything that goes serious, that goes to the top, and going to the top on both HSBC and LIBOR means going after the Treasury Secretary of the United States, Timothy Geithner, and anybody who was in the way of that, because Geithner sat on top of the billions and billions that flooded into the of cocaine money, and he sat on top of permitting from the U.S. side what was going on in London with the LIBOR criminal fixing of the rates. So I'm convinced the evidence is there that he criminally, not just that he was looking the other way or just kind of, that he had to do things to make sure nobody got in the way from the U.S. side of what was going on in London with LIBOR. I think that evidence is there, and there's enough investigators that want this evidence out and brought into the prosecutorial process at the Justice Department level. And I think those are the kinds of things that could and should be popping out in the next weeks in combination with a resurgence on Glass-Steagall and the recognition that this administration is getting us into World War III. So I would only say I think the floodgate is ready to burst. from what I can judge in terms of the evidentiary material in the hands of actual investigatory agencies on both sides of the Atlantic. But some significant move has got to come from the U.S.
Well, I think that that takes the time for this time. We'll be back, and I have two things to add in closing. One thing is that on Thursday, that was September 6th, that was the election, the primary in Massachusetts, where Rachel Brown, who was on the show last week, and discussing the need for calling on everyone, she played for leadership. She played that role in the, she's playing it nationwide, and a Kennedy was elected. I don't have more to say about the numbers of votes, that wasn't, but her impact nationwide, but her impact there is what leadership is all about. And in that regard, I want to end on a sad but a note of great love and affection for someone we miss. Gail Billington, last week, a longtime associate of Mr. LaRouche, died. It was after a 10-year battle with a terrible disease, and she was a longtime international leader, beloved friend of all of ours. And yesterday was her funeral. And I'll just mention, we're the EIR, the next issue, is going to have more remembrances, which she received from around the world, description and remembrance of Gail Billington. And one thing,
including from a number of heads of state in Asia.
That's right. And she... One thing I think Mr. LaRouche said this morning, who also joined with many people in her funeral, that her life, what she did, sets the stage for our mission, personally and in general. And that's something we are inspired with. So this ends the LaRouche Show, September 8th, 2012. I thank Roger Moore in Germany and Paul Gallagher here in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.